This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
Why should you listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand?
We're not boring. A lot of news is boring.
And tedious.
And depressing.
And makes you angry. You don't want to live your life like that.
Hey, I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty.
We're Armstrong and Getty.
We try to bring you the truth.
And help you figure out this crazy modern world.
How about something about a comedic tone?
We have a winner.
Yes. Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is going to be bad. This is going to be one of New York's darker spiral moments, I think.
In my America, the only thing that should require bulletproof glass is anyone making a movie with Alec Baldwin. In California, it's spiking. In Los Angeles, specifically, it's spiking. And she's blaming the federal government because that's what she does.
This guy will go out of his way to every different group in Minneapolis, not just the Somali neighborhoods. He'll even go and vie for Republican support because, although I do believe Jacob Frey is the worst mayor in the country, I mean, this is the man who let Minneapolis burn.
I love cities. I love the country, but I love cities as well. I just do. I enjoy them each for what they are. I love being in the mountains, the quiet of nature. It's a great place to pray. I love the insanity of a city and the lights and the horns and the restaurants. I love it all. And even if you hate cities, you should know that cities are an important part of your country. They're not everything. The countryside matters too, but cities are important. And it is a big deal that our greatest cities, our biggest cities, our most powerful cities, the cities international people come visit, they're not run by communists.
Today begins a new era. We will draw this city closer together. We will replace the frigidity of rugged individualism with the warmth of collectivism. I was elected as a democratic socialist, and I will govern as a democratic socialist. I will not abandon my principles for fear of being deemed radical.
That guy's the mayor of the most important city in the world. That guy's the mayor of the largest, most wealthy, most powerful city in the United States of America. It's a big deal. Maybe you hate New York City. Maybe you've never been. Maybe you have been and you hate it, and that's fine. That's why I'm not here to make the pitch for the Big Apple. It's a big deal that these people are tearing apart our cities. And remember, again, I want to drive this point home. You know why Washington, D.C. has all this white marble and stuff like that? And even if you haven't been there, you've seen the buildings. You know why that is? The founders did that on purpose. Why did they do that? They did that for international dignitaries, people coming from other countries who would come to Washington, D.C. They wanted them to be wowed by our capital, thus giving our country more legitimacy in their eyes. That was the whole purpose of it. You know, it matters. So I want to stress this. In Tokyo, in Berlin, in London, where if there's a billboard, if there's an ad for America, as much as I love Montana, where I graduated high school, Montana's not on it. You know what's on it? New York City, Los Angeles, Chicago. Our cities are what you see there. And when people travel, they travel to those cities so often. And just think about this. Think about hopping on a plane from Tokyo, like I just mentioned. And you fly into Los Angeles thinking you're going to see the Hollywood sign, sun, the beach, some pretty girls. But instead, this is what you get.
An up-close, exclusive look underground at living conditions too extreme for words.
It's hard to imagine someone living in there.
Trash, human waste, and going in an overpowering stench.
I gotta get back.
Just moments earlier, we watched someone climb out of that storm drain using the sewer as shelter.
Water and food?
Her answer's hard to understand. But the area, 88th and South Grand, overwhelmed with RVs, tents, and trash.
Hello, yes.
Juan Nala with nonprofit Clean LA with me was picking up garbage here Monday.
We got a lady living down there.
When he saw not one, but two people emerge from the storm drain.
I can't explain that. You know, a person living like a rat, worse than a rat, come on. It's a human being. Why are we accepting this? Why? All the officials, they have to do something. They have to fix this problem.
It pisses me off. That's why I was like, what y'all doing? Finna tell them to clean it up?
You know how gorgeous Los Angeles is? You've heard me talk about it before. You fly into LAX, and you're coming in over the mountains, the ocean right there. And, you know, before you land, before you get close enough, you're looking and you're thinking to yourself, it's freaking paradise. I mean, I can imagine all the people who tried to settle and settled Los Angeles back in the day. I can imagine what they thought riding a horse through those mountains and coming across Los Angeles. It should be the Mecca in America. It's a total filthy, crime-ridden dump. One of the probably the least safe I've felt in an American city in a long time is when I went to LA recently. So we have to decide, who's the worst mayor in the country? Who's the one most responsible for the destruction of their cities? We're going to talk about New York City. We're going to talk about Minneapolis. Can't forget about Minneapolis, but we're going to talk about LA. We're going to talk about that with some great guests for you. We're going to have a good time tonight on I'm Right. All right? We'll be back.
All right, very good. Let's do the promo. Stand by for the promo. And you're good to go.
Who's the worst mayor in America? It's hard to decide, right? Well, we thought we'd bring on some experts from the various places around the country, and we'll hash this out. Who is the worst? Why don't you start taking some natural herbal supplements from Chomp? I'm not kidding. You're going to feel better all the time. Better energy, better focus. When you're at home, you're better. On the weekend, you're better. At work, you're better. You might end up getting yourself a promotion. Do you know how much your life will change if you're, let's say you're a dude and you start taking a male vitality stack from Chalk and your T levels go up 20% in 90 days? Do you know how that would change your life? That's real. But I'm 45 years old. My T levels are in the high 700s. Natural herbal supplements from Chalk. I don't need needles in my arm. C-H-O-Q. Chalk.com/Jesse.
If a commission studying reparations in this city recommended cash reparations for people impacted in New York City, would you support that recommendation?
First, I want to say that I stand by what I submitted.
Yes.
It's the truth.
Yes.
It's not a personal assessment. And we often think about slavery and the complicity in slavery as being exclusively to certain geographic areas of the country.
Right.
Here in New York City, we were very complicit. And so I look forward to whatever those findings are. I can't give you an answer in advance of them,
okay,
but I can tell you that this is critically important because this is also what it looks like to acknowledge what history truly was.
I'm sorry, these people are just such clowns. Joining me now is my friend Inez Stettman, senior policy and legal analyst for the wonderful Independent Women's Forum. Okay, Inez, setting aside the normal thing that every Democrat has to do is give these people a pat on the head. Yes, yes, reparations are coming. I suspect that this guy might actually be serious because he's serious. He's a serious person.
Yeah, I mean, I think we generally make the mistake of underestimating some of the left's biggest proponents because they are so ridiculous. Either they have the blue and purple hair and the nose ring, or you know, they're men pretending to be women, like the health secretary, or in Mondami's case, he's always got that like big goofy smile on his face. But the policies that he's advancing are very real and they have very real impacts, and I would not put this past him at all.
You are sadly familiar with said impacts. I have not been to the city I love so much in probably a year and a half, maybe 2 years. Have things changed?
Look, New York City has, what do they say about countries? You know, you have a lot of ruin in a country. New York City has a lot of ruin in it. It's obviously the largest city in the United States. It has enormous advantages, both in terms of the industries it's able to attract and in terms of the cultural availability of, I mean, just particular things that are only available in New York City, I would say, in the United States. I love the city, full disclosure. But this is going to be bad. This is going to be one of New York's darker spiral moments, I think, in part because I don't think Mondami's going anywhere. I think he'll probably get a second term. And he's already implementing things that are truly going to chase an enormous amount of capital, enormous amount of wealth-producing people and industries, at least across the river into Jersey, possibly into the arms of you know, Florida or Texas. And that is going to have a real impact on the city. And that's not even getting to the cultural or the crime and quality of life issues that he's going full steam ahead in the wrong direction on.
I want to focus on the money part because you brought up a really great point. New York City, for a variety of reasons, is so appealing that you can have a crappy mayor. They certainly have plenty of times before and still kind of maintain because enough people are going to want to be there and do business there. Do you think, like with the rent stuff, with the tack and billionaire stuff, that it's finally been pushed to a point where that's not going to be the case?
I think especially if Mondami gets a second term, I think there are a lot of people preparing to leave now. And that is what I hear from these kinds of political and finance circles, that there are a lot of industries that are especially looking to uproot and maybe go across the river to Jersey City, which would not be as disruptive, right, to their workforce and everything else. It's similar to the D.C. area, right? You've got three different jurisdictions very close together in the tri-state area. So that's one possibility. Not that New Jersey governance is that much better, but at least it would be out of the clutches of Mondami himself, or to go just further north in New York State up into Westchester County. I'm hearing a lot of that. And then, of course, there are the appeal, there are the appealing spots for business all over the country now, especially with the advent of remote work in, you know, Miami, in Dallas or Fort Worth. So there's an enormous incentive for companies to do that. And Mondami is really pushing their allegiance to the Big Apple, I think.
Let's talk about foreigners, Inez, because, well, they're the reason he's there. I mean, that's the bottom line. They're the reason he's there. The mass importation of foreigners is what allows guys like Mamdani to win elections.
The demographics of New York City have changed enormously just in the last 10 or 15 years. And what you've said is completely true. It's one part of that coalition. We hear a lot of talk about the other half of Mondami's coalition, which is sort of downwardly mobile, overeducated, mostly millennials and Gen Z. And he is enormously popular with that coalition that is predominantly white. So it's by no means his only coalition. But I think this election was, and I wrote in The American Mind about it, I think this election was the first flex of traditional ethnic bloc power that's been part of New York City politics for a long time, but this is the first flex of the massive Islamic immigration to the city. I mean, I was surprised by the numbers. It's almost 9% of the city that is now Muslim. That is an enormous ethnic voting bloc. And Mondami was the first one to really take advantage of it. I remember during the mayoral debates with Andrew Cuomo. Andrew Cuomo was hit for not going mosque to mosque, asking for their votes, promising things in return. And I can guarantee you, Cuomo is probably the last New York Democrat to make that mistake. I think every New York Democrat after this is going to have to do retail politics at mosques across New York City. And that is a major change in the city's politics, I don't think for the good. But yes, it's a direct result of the fact that we have massively increased Muslim immigration to the United States since 9/11.
How does the town that suffered 9/11 have a 9% Muslim population? And as how does that happen? That shouldn't happen.
Yeah, I mean, you would think, but it absolutely happened, and it happened kind of quietly. As I say, even I was, you know, I live in the city, and I was surprised to read the numbers. So there are essentially these enclaves that live in different parts of Brooklyn, out near Bay Ridge. On Mondami's map, it was labeled Little Palestine. Now, apparently, it's no longer Bay Ridge. It's Little Palestine. And that's a somewhat accurate description of the neighborhood. So because I've been there and I saw the demographics of the people who are there. And so this has happened very quickly. It's hard to overestimate how quickly this has happened. Because what, since 9/11, we're talking about 25, you know, a quarter century, basically, right? A little bit more than that. And the numbers have just exploded. There was a negligible number of Muslims in the city, at the end of the 20th century. And now you're talking about 9% of a city. By the way, for comparison, people always talk about New York City as being kind of a center of Jewish life in America. It's 9% Jewish. So those populations are roughly equivalent now. New York City is as Muslim as it is Jewish.
Little Palestine sounds like a lovely place. All right, and let's focus on the Democrat Party as a whole, because Mamdani is honestly probably the face of this DSA movement, and I am so enjoying watching these Democrats have to do the, well, we're a big tent thing. Do these people not understand this wolf is going to eat all of them?
It reminds me very much of the dynamic on the right with the Tea Party, where the energy of the base is clearly in one direction. The establishment of the party is standing in the way, and you know that wall is going to be swept away at some point. I don't enjoy it. I can't really enjoy it as much as you, I guess, because it's one of those things. Be careful what you wish for. There are two major parties in the United States, and if one of them is wholly taken over by DSA outright proponents of socialism, of communism, of Islamism in many cases, these things actually do hang together. This anti-colonial mindset that sees America as the great Satan and Israel as the little Satan. These things do actually ideologically hang together, even though they have superficial contradictions that people like to point out. And the thing that unifies them is hatred of the West and hatred of America in particular. And that is a very scary ideology to have running one of America's two major parties that has, a coin's flip chance of always holding the government. So I can't enjoy that. Although, as we've talked about many times, Jesse, it's not like it's that different from the Democratic establishment to begin with. There's a very opposite problem is in the Republican Party. In the Republican Party, people were mad. Voters were mad because Republicans would go to their districts and promise to vote conservative, and they would go to Washington, D.C., and they would vote moderate or even, left of moderate when they actually, were casting their votes. It's almost the opposite problem with Democrats. The establishment of the Democratic Party is not that different, except for maybe one or two issues, than their DSA flank on actual policy. Look at, Schellenberger or Abigail Spanberger's agenda in Virginia is not that different from the DSA's. The difference between the moderates and the establishment people in the Democratic Party and the DSA is simply how they speak and how much they lie in public. And the DSA is essentially telling their establishment, no, you're not allowed to gloss over the radical aspects of this anymore. We want to hear you say out loud that you want to abolish the police.
Plus, it has the effect of pulling the entire party to the left, even if they lose elections. Speaking of losing elections, I saw a poll. Kathy Hochul's only up 4 against this Republican. There's no chance a Republican's governor in New York, right?
I don't think of New York State as liberal as some people do. Coming from California, of course, my standards are skewed. In California, there is no hope. I'm sorry for people who are sort of excited about Steve Hilton, but that's not going to happen. And among many other reasons, because the vote count is unreliable. But even if it were reliable, California is a deep, deep, deep blue state. And I don't foresee in any intermediate future any Republican having success statewide in California. New York is a bit different. Obviously, the city is very blue, but the whole rest of the state, in large part, is red or purple. Really, what's going to swing the election is whether there's a red shift among the kind of sort of upper middle class, mid counties that are above north of New York City, but south of upstate and not, out in the west. They're very populous. They're very similar for people who are around the DC area, very similar to sort of Northern Virginia. But they do sometimes swing more or less Republican. And some of these issues that Mondami is pushing may really scare them, right? If the fact that he put out a list of everybody who has, basically an apartment worth over $1 million, which is almost all the apartments in New York City, that he put out a hit list for those people that they now have to prove back to the city that they have the right to be there and that they don't have to pay this new tax. It's totally flipped the burden, right? Now you have to go to the city offices and prove that in fact it is your residence or that it's not worth what the city is valuing it or whatever. So it's put everybody in the essentially defense seat to not pay this tax. I do think some of those things are scary to the wealthy sort of suburban part of New York. So if I had to bet, I would bet against the Republicans statewide in New York, but I don't think it's as foregone a conclusion as it is in some other states.
Inez, thank you, ma'am. Come back.
Thank you.
All right, we have to go across the country now. We just did New York City. Let's go talk to John Phillips and find out about LA. Next. Financial difficulties weigh you down like nothing else. Like nothing else. I've been there before. Bills pile up. It's just, you can't make the payments. I know what it's like. It's a horrible, horrible feeling. Are you carrying high interest debt, 20, 30% on something? Do you have a mortgage? I know what it feels like to feel like you're never getting out of it. You're drowning. American Financing has been offering people just like you a path to freedom from all this for a long time. You have everything you need. All it takes is going to AmericanFinancing.net/Jesse and finding out how to get that financial elephant off your friggin' back. This is not inevitable. It's not going to take forever. American Financing has been helping people like you for a long time. And don't sit and stress, oh, you don't know how bad it is. They've heard it all. AmericanFinancing.net/Jesse.
In this election, let's stand for what we believe in. A city where we will finally solve homelessness. A city where we are feeling safe, but actually are safe. And a city that doesn't price us out, but actually counts us in. So let's build Los Angeles together.
Sounds like things are going well. Joining me now, John Phillips, host of the Accountability Podcast, available at johnnydontlike.com. All right, John. Well, Garen Bass has actually flown to Cuba for communist training. So how are things in L.A.? Because I was just in L.A. recently, and the ATMs are locked up behind steel and cinder block. And I don't know that I've felt that unsafe walking through a city in America in a very long time.
Well, it's not just the ATM. So are the shampoo. I mean, go to Target and try to buy shampoo. It's behind bulletproof glass. I mean, in my America, the only thing that should require bulletproof glass is anyone making a movie with Alec Baldwin. But that's the way we live here in Los Angeles. And Karen Bass ran on the platform of fixing the homeless problem in Los Angeles, because ever since we took this permissive attitude about drugs and started emptying the prisons, funny thing happened. Retail theft shot through the roof. Homeless encampments started popping up everywhere. And she said it was her number one priority. Well, we just had a new homeless count in Los Angeles, and the numbers went up. And Karen Bass is blaming Donald Trump. She's blaming Gavin Newsom at the state level, despite the fact that if you look at homeless numbers nationally, it's really not that big of a problem in many places. In California, it's spiking. In Los Angeles specifically, it's spiking. And she's blaming the federal government because that's what she does. Now, that was her number one priority. If you take that off the table, we have the fact that we burned down the Palisades with the fires. We have a city that is broke. We have a police department that does not have the personnel they need to police the city on a daily basis, let alone prepared for the Olympics when they come to town in 2028. It's a disaster for Karen Bass. Now, she may think there's light at the end of the tunnel, but I think that light is a train that's headed right for her.
Okay, let's focus on this homeless problem, because I honestly, it's not like I haven't seen homeless people before. It was amazing in Los Angeles to see how it's everywhere. And they're in the freaking storm drains. What specifically have they done there that has caused it to be the mecca for hobos?
Well, they've told the cops to look the other way when the homeless do things like shoot up drugs in public, or crimes associated with poverty. So stealing mail, stealing packages, stealing bicycles, all of those sorts of things. The cops really don't enforce a lot of those violations, because they know that the political will at City Hall is not there for them. So they just drive by and wave when they see criminal activity going on in these homeless encampments. We give them money. We give them social services. We're spending millions and millions and millions of dollars on these homeless services NGOs, these organizations that Spencer Pratt really ran against, where they'll give them cigarettes, they'll give them drug paraphernalia, they'll take care of them in any number of ways that you wouldn't have access to, things you wouldn't have access to in North Dakota or, you know, West Virginia or some other part of the country. So we are a bum magnet, and we are attracting a lot of people with a lot of problems from all over the country to come here. And that is the reason the numbers are going up. When you look at where these people are from, they're not a lot of homegrown California bums. We're bringing in the drug addicts from all over the country, and they're living on our streets because we're willing to tolerate it.
Okay, so, I mean, I guess I just have to ask, what can be done? Because from what I understand, John, these freaking bums are voting. At least that's the rumor, that they're being handed ballots. If the elections are so corrupt in Los Angeles, you mentioned Spencer Pratt, what can be done?
Well, the Democratic Party has to become offended at living this way. And for whatever reason, and part of it is because many of them with money live in areas that are inoculated from these problems, but they have endless supplies of tolerance of living like this. Why? I don't know, but it just doesn't seem to bother them. You look at how, you know, the voting patterns in Los Angeles, voting patterns in Long Beach and other cities here in Southern California. And if the Democratic candidate loses, the one who's most likely to beat them is a DSA candidate who thinks that the Democrats don't go far enough. And nothing is going to change in this state until the people start voting differently. And because Democrats outnumber Republicans by such large numbers, nothing is going to change until Democrats start being offended at the condition of our state. And I just don't see that happening anytime soon.
Let's talk about Spencer for a second, John, because it's one of those situations where he clearly has a gift for it. He was very, very sharp, awesome campaigner, but, you know, swimming against the ocean, trying to run in LA, it is what it is. That we all knew, everyone with a brain knew what way that was going to go. But I would like to see that guy not just tossed aside now, right? There's got to be some political future somehow, some way for Spencer Pratt.
Well, he's indicated that his days as a candidate are over, but he is going to be very active on social media at calling out all of the corruption, calling out all of the misdeeds that are going on at Los Angeles City Hall. And what he's going to try to do is shame and embarrass them into either leaving the public arena or, I guess, changing whatever it is that they do. Or if you really push it to a certain point, maybe change the patterns of the voters here in Los Angeles. And he has a huge following on social media. He's someone who appears on various programs. He's appeared on my radio program twice. He's very good. People think that he's dumb. People think that he's not well-read. None of that is true. He's a guy who really deeply understands the problems that we're facing here in California, and he has solutions to offer. But at this point, being a candidate is probably futile because he had just about everything break his way in the primary in terms of winning the debate, having the ads on social media that got the most views, having interviews with the big programs. He went on Joe Rogan and others that really went viral and went all over the place. He was in the water when the wave hit, and even that wasn't good enough to get onto the November ballot. So I don't blame him for not wanting to be a candidate anymore. And I think that he's looking at his skill set and goes, okay, I know how to draw attention to these problems. I know how to publicly humiliate these people. If I can't get into office and change it that way, I'm going to make life miserable for them.
You mentioned Karen Bass and Newsom, that there's some friction there. And just curious about this California coalition, because there's obviously a car wreck coming between Dome and Newsom. Is Karen Bass, Dome, are they allies?
Well, they're all kind of frenemies. Don't forget, it was Kamala who knifed Karen Bass to get the vice presidency in the first place. Those two were the two that were on the finals, you know, list for Joe Biden. And it was Kamala's people that put all the negative stories out about Karen Bass, about her going to Cuba and her flirting with communism and all of those stories. That didn't come from the conservative news media. That came from Kamala Harris and her political consultants here in California, to the point to where when she was offered the vice presidency, Biden said, you cannot bring any of your California people with you because I'm going to be the next one to get knifed in the back. Since then, the two of them have made up, Bass and Kamala, but I don't think they trust each other as far as they can throw her. They're all competitors in one way or another. So I don't think there's a whole lot of trust going on between those three in any permutation.
Final one for me, John. What's going on with Gavin Newsom's ex-mistress?
Okay, so she now has a memoir that's coming out where she talks about their affair. And her version of the affair is very different than his. He said that it was very brief and he ended it. She's saying none of that is true. It went on for a long time and they had sex basically every place they could in the state of California, including bars and other public places. She said that his come on line to her when he decided that he was going to pursue her was, look at you, you lost all the baby fat. And that was enough to get her interested, which, I mean, I don't know, you know, how he thought that was going to play. You walk up to someone and go, oh, you're less fat than you used to be. That's pretty good. But it was enough for her. And she's upset because not only did he mischaracterize, according to her, their relationship in his book, he sent his wife out to publicly attack her and to shame her and to go after her in public forums. So this woman who had her marriage destroyed, she ended up in rehab. I guess she had a massive drug problem and alcohol problem. She believes that Gavin Newsom destroyed her life and then lied about the nature of their relationship. So my guess is when this book comes out, there will be even more details than what we read in Vanity Fair from the excerpts that were just published. And I am here for it because don't forget, Gavin, if he's going to win the Democratic nomination for president, he's going to have to do it with overwhelming support among Democratic women. And there's no way to talk about this story without him looking really, really bad.
Well, you better be careful without alcohol. That's how you get the baby fat back on. John, thank you, brother. I appreciate it so much. We have more next. I love veteran-led companies for obvious reasons. I think that our corporate world, there's such a lack of patriotism there. And when you get a company that's led by someone who's fought for this country, you at least know you're getting that. Now, Pure Talk is led by a very special gentleman. He did not one, but two tours with MACV SOG in Vietnam. You know, those behind enemy lines guys we watch movies about? Yeah, that's the guy who leads Pure Talk. You ever wonder why they don't participate in Pride Month? Why they hire Americans who speak English? Why they'll charge you less? No contract, no cancellation fee. Pure Talk does it right. Oh, and by the way, all this, and they're on the exact same towers as the big guys. You're not sacrificing anything. You can keep your phone, you can keep your number, but do make the switch. Stop paying those other companies. PureTalk.com/JesseTV. I'm sorry, it makes me laugh. These people were so shameless, I almost admire it. Joining me now, my friend, columnist with townhall.com, Dustin Gregg. Dustin, I'm sorry, it makes me snicker to have to sit there and gut down that whatever slop was on the table and have to pretend like you're enjoying it. It makes me smile. I'm a bad person.
No, Jacob Frey, I mean, this guy will do anything to get elected. And because he's in Minneapolis, he does have to rely on a certain population that is highly densely populated in the Cedar Rapids neighborhood in Minneapolis. And that's kind of where we get to that point right there with Jacob Frey. But it's not just that. I mean, this guy will go out of his way to every different group in Minneapolis, not just the Somali neighborhoods. He'll even go and vie for Republican support because, although I do believe Jacob Frey is the worst mayor in the country, I mean, this is the man who let Minneapolis burn. It could be even worse because we could have had Omar Fateh as our mayor, which would have been an even bigger downgrade from Jacob Frey. So just to go to show, it could be so much worse in Minneapolis, but we have to hand it to you, Jacob Frey. You might be worse than Mamdani in many of these cases. Other than maybe some fiscal policy, but like it's wild what this man will do to get elected and stay relevant. But this is what he has to do. He has to hold off a little bit longer until he eventually runs for governor or Congress one day, because that's his goal at the end of the day. But yeah, he's got to maintain his spot as mayor for now in the meantime.
Dustin, how powerful is the Somali contingent of Minnesota? Obviously, everybody nationally, we see the headlines, right? And you see some internet video, but the reality is oftentimes different. What are they? Are they 50% of the city? What are they?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's a significant block of the Democrat primary voters. Now, scope of the actual state, 150,000 people. 5 million are Minnesotans. Like, you're not going to be shaking up at that much in that regard. But in regard to two specific communities, Minneapolis, St. Paul as one, and another, St. Cloud, Minnesota. St. Cloud, as an example, is the single largest flip district in the state of Minnesota. But as a significant Somali population, when it comes to the general election, that community is actually greatly affects the general election. But when it comes to like Minneapolis, St. Paul, they just help run the actual primary system. That's how you get Ilhan Omar, Keith Ellison, and all these other different reps and senators who predominantly come from just these areas. And we had another podcaster come at one point, I'm spacing on the name here, but he did an interview where he just went door to door interviewing Somalis. And one of the individuals, very well educated, was an engineer, I believe, ended up basically saying, yeah, I'm from Virginia, but I moved to Minneapolis because this is the central power of Somali culture. When we come here and we actually build up our community together, we have political power and capital. Said it straight up. It was kind of bizarre to just say that out loud. Like, I moved from Virginia to Minneapolis so we could gain political power. And it is a part of the system. And that is how you now see even Ilhan Omar now. We saw her sister is now involved with a multi-million dollar fraud scheme involving USAID funding and shared a address with that USAID organization with a Feeding Our Future address that was used. So it is a scheme, it is a plot, and right there at the center in the entire country is Minneapolis, Minnesota.
Dustin, Tim Walz's problems are well chronicled. Might be in some legal trouble, not sure how far that's going, but it's just hard for me to believe none of that stink bled down to Jacob Frey. Is he in the limelight at all for any of this stuff?
Well, absolutely. I mean, even Jacob Frey's wife worked for the attorney's office that represented Feeding Our Future. They helped set up the paperwork to start the organization. But the only reason it really hasn't hit Jacob Frey too badly is because who was his opponent? It was Omar Fateh, who is literally in the room with Amy Bach, the leader of Feeding Our Future, celebrating the good work that they do. So, like, it could be so much worse, but Jacob Frey is just, unfortunately, had the best opponents he could possibly ask for. Otherwise, I do think this guy would have been gone already, but the Democrats and the DSA keep putting up even more corrupt individuals that actually help shield this guy a little bit. So that's kind of the makeup of that situation.
Dustin, what's the crime situation? Again, I see statistics. I haven't been in Minnesota in years. What's the reality of if I fly in tomorrow and I'm walking around downtown Minneapolis?
Yeah, as long as you get proper security, which we're actually working on a major event here with XXSY. Sophie Cunningham's coming on Sunday. So, like, we have great security for that event. So when you have that, it's great. If you're just an average person walking down the street, we've done statistics on this where, like, it's technically more dangerous to walk in downtown Minneapolis than to go to Israel right now in the middle of war. you're far more likely to get jumped or different things like that in the city of Minneapolis. And most recently, we actually had data come back that said Minneapolis has had the largest increase of any city in the country for car thefts and robberies, different things like that, just coming into the city. But also get this, Jesse, coming back to Jacob Fry a little bit, tying him into this, Minneapolis has actually finally been ordered after over probably about a decade's worth of time here. They have been falling short of their city charter requirements for the minimum allotment of police officers. They have now been ordered by a judge to fulfill that by January. To now put in perspective, that's 100 officers. They haven't been able to hire that over the course of years, but now they have till January to cover that. But that's created this giant situation where Minneapolis just isn't safe because they don't even have enough officers to fill the minimum requirements to do so. And because they're also a fiscal mess as well. I mean, Omar Fatah, again, would have been even worse. But they're staring down the barrel of a $32 million budget gap deficit. So if they were to maintain everything it is right now, they're $32 million in the hole. So they're going to have to make cuts and hire these officers. I mean, it's a complete mess. And again, Jacob Fry is technically one of the better members in this situation. They're one member away from a DSA majority on the Minneapolis City Council, and even still a lot of the mainstream members, they still vote with the DSA 90% of the time. So it's a complete mess here in Minneapolis. And because of the DSA, their fiscal instability, the crime that has run rampant, and their inability to actually address it has compounded into this situation that we see today. And it's an absolute disaster. Unless you come in and hire private security, it's just not safe.
Good grief. Okay, Dustin, let's focus. Let's try to nail down on this one here. 100 officers by January. They haven't been able to fill it, as you already pointed out. That to me screams we're going to have a bunch of dirt balls becoming police officers in Minneapolis. Yes. I just don't see any other way around that.
Yeah, no, and to that point too, I live in Wright County, so we're one county line over from Hennepin in Minneapolis. We have one of the best police departments in the entire state. We have the largest department for patrol officers. We have senior officers from these metro county departments taking up to $40,000 a year pay decreases so they could come work out here in a community where they actually respect law enforcement. So they're taking massive pay cuts. Their best officers are coming out here to work in for inferior pay just for a better situation. But what's going to happen, as you mentioned, you're going to have, you know, not the best of the batch. You know, a law enforcement, generally, my waterline's pretty high. If you're in law enforcement, you're a trusted individual, but you're going to get the least experienced and potentially corrupt in some cases individuals going and working for the worst situation in the country. I mean, let's not say the state of Minnesota. Being an officer in the city of Minneapolis is probably the worst job you could possibly ask for. If you're just your fourth day on the job, Jesse, and you oversee someone having an overdose, you can go to prison for years just by witnessing it on your fourth day on the job. And that's what happened during the George Floyd riots, and it has scattered now into this. We see Metro surge. And quite frankly, there's no end in sight. The next time something happens, it's going to hit Minneapolis again. And it's going to, with all these compounded failures, it's just going to get worse.
Final one from me. I know you guys have a primary coming up. And I know that Mike Lindell, who had the Trump endorsement, has the Trump endorsement, was fairly comfortably ahead, has loudly and repeatedly now called for some form of amnesty. Where's all this thing going?
Yeah, it's a complete mess here on the ground when it comes to that. Now, granted, Mike, I think he was at 21% pretty comfortably. That's kind of his base support here in Minnesota before the endorsement. I think Lisa Damoth was around 32%. Now, she's lost a couple percentage points, as well as the endorsed Republican candidate, Kendall Qualls, who was about 26%. Now it's completely flipped around. Now Lindell's probably up by 6 after that endorsement. But this was before amnesty came out. And this was before new fundraising numbers came out. I think we saw recently Lindell only has like $80,000 cash on hand, and he can't even run a Facebook ad. His his campaign has complained because they've never attempted to run one till yesterday. So they have no ability to run ads or do any type of actual campaign work, and they're only up 6 points right now. And that was before amnesty hit. So I do foresee Lisa Damoth winning that primary, and for the sake of Minnesotans, I hope we win it. And not even for the sake of winning the governorship. Amy's an uphill climb, and I'm acknowledging that right here, right now to everyone. But if Mike Lindell is our candidate, one, independents, they're going to be tough to come by for him. It just is, for obvious reasons that we probably already know. It's Minnesota. It's a tough state. But also, you've now turned off the MAGA base. Now we're going to be letting illegals come into this country? I mean, he was already down 20 points. It could be 30 points if he's turning off the MAGA base on top of that. I really hope we don't end up nominating the guy. But yeah, he's running in circles. And, you know, a lot of that, I think, is more due to his business, actually. Because when you come out like this and your customer base are MAGA pillow buyers, and all of a sudden you come against the number one issue for America First policies, I mean, people are out here burning pillows. I've heard of literally two cases of someone burning their pillows because they're so upset with about it. So we'll kind of see how that primary shakes out. We're not going to know exactly how it ends up turning out until it actually happens. That's 14 days away from now, 13 days away from now. But overall, yeah, on the ground, they're pretty upset about it. Will the Trump endorsement be able to pull him just over the edge? We'll see, but it's going to be a nail biter. I will tell you that.
Dustin, thank you, brother. I appreciate it. All right. You know what time it is. We're going to have to pick a winner. Next. All right. You know, we can't have a competition and a conversation like this without actually picking a winner. But I'm here to tell you, it's not Jacob Fry. It's not Karen Bass. It's not even Mamdani. The worst mayor in the United States of America is Brandon Johnson of Chicago. And look, I understand. We just heard everybody make a very good case for the monster that runs their particular city. I mean, wrap your mind around this. This guy is the mayor of Chicago.
Some detractors that will push back on me and say, you know, the only thing that the mayor talks about is the hiring of black people. No, what I'm saying is when you hire our people, we always look out for everybody else. We are the most generous people on the planet. I don't know too many cultures that have play cousins. That's how generous we are. We just make somebody a family member, right? This is how we are. And so business and economic neighborhood development, the deputy mayor is a black woman. Department of Planning and Development is a black woman. Infrastructure deputy mayor is a black woman. Chief operations officer is a black man. Budget director is a black woman. Senior advisor is a black man. And I'm laying that out because when you ask how do we ensure that our people get a chance to grow their business.
You made a black woman the budget director? That's certainly a choice. Either way, you know how cool Chicago is? If you've ever been to Chicago, I've been a couple times. You know how hard you have to work to taint that city? But he did it. He did it. Brandon Johnson's the worst mayor in America. We'll do it again.
I would thank you for coming to my YouTube channel, but I know how brilliant it is, and I know you love it here. So subscribe and watch. We're going to start really ramping things up and putting some funny stuff, some interesting stuff out there, some collaborations. Either way, my YouTube channel is officially the place to be. So stick around.
Why should you listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand?
We're not boring. A lot of news is boring.
And tedious.
And depressing.
And makes you angry. You don't want to live your life like that.
Hey, I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty.
We're Armstrong and Getty.
We try to bring you the truth.
And help you figure out this crazy modern world.
How about something about a comedic tone?
We have a winner.
Yes. Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.